Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for inviting me to speak at today's discussion. My presentation seeks to examine the possible security futures for Asia and the likely developments that may increase the risk of instability, competition, and even conflict and war. I want to mainly focus on China because I think that that represents the single most important strategic development in Asia today. And I'm sure we'll have more broader discussions about Japan and Korea and other places later in the day, so I don't want to double up on those. Can we go to the next slide, please? Thanks. So in talking about the strategic outlook, we're automatically having to think about the future. And this is highly challenging. We tend, when we look at the security environment, we look at a snapshot of what's happening today, and simply we tend to extrapolate trends to paint a picture of the future. But that's risky. As Colin Gray notes, there's nothing dates so rapidly as yesterday's tomorrow. The further forward you look, the hazier it gets. And there is a risk in simply assuming that current trends will continue. They may very well do just that. But at the end of the Cold War in 1989 to 91, and then the events of 9/11 have demonstrated, strategic shocks and black swan events can surprise you. It is also said that history rhymes. It may not repeat itself exactly, but certain factors and forces shape international affairs in a timeless manner. So when we look at the strategic outlook in 2015 and we think about where it's going beyond that, we have to be prepared for surprises. Next slide. Today in 2014, on the centenary of the beginning of the First World War, the international system can be characterised by accelerating change, strategic uncertainty, and security complexity. It is witnessing the return of major power geopolitical competition, which was something that during the post-Cold War interregnum, people had tended to dismiss as a possibility. Well, now we are back into major power geopolitical competition in Asia, in Europe, and in the Middle East. We're seeing an aggressive hybrid threats like Islamic State that sow chaos, violence, and disorder across much of the region. Far from history ending, as commentators have suggested in the 1990s, hard power is once again more important as a tool of nation states. We're seeing power shifting from the old world of Europe and North America to Asia, and it seems that the end of the Vasco da Gama era of Western dominance of international affairs is drawing to a close. It's the developing world now that's enjoying rapid economic growth, with Asia now moving formally towards global economic and thus potentially political leadership. Europe's economy seems set for continued weaknesses and vulnerabilities, and along Europe's periphery, authoritarian states and hostile non-state actors are competing with Western democracies for influence, power, and access to strategic terrain and resources. This is the return of traditional big power geopolitics, and so history rhymes. What about the United States? The US role in Asia is as vital as it's ever been in terms of its hub and spokes approach to regional security relationships. That's been the basis of stability and peace in Asia since 1945, and it's permitted the startling growth of Asian economies. US economic power is critical to its political influence and to sustaining its military presence. Without all three, the US role in Asia would wane, and with it, stability and power. In that sense, Obama's announcement of the 2011 rebalance to Asia was welcome news. But there is a but coming here. The US economy seems to be recovering relatively strongly after the 2008-11 global financial crisis. However, there are deep financial and economic risks building up as national debt continues to accumulate at a frightening rate. Bitter political partisanship is undermining the ability of the US leaders to address these domestic sources of weakness. These internal challenges are accentuating strains of the US ability to sustain its adequate defence spending in order to maintain US military power and readiness and to develop new military capabilities that are vital in the face of new challenges. Most worryingly, there are valid concerns that internal domestic economic and political challenges may contribute in part to the US rebalance to Asia being stillborn, especially if it is drawn into other security crises now occurring in the Middle East. There are also growing international concerns over a current absence of US global leadership at a crucial moment in the formative stages of the 21st century. In particular, the failure of the US to lead in responding to crises in Syria, Iraq, and Ukraine is unnerving. All these factors raise the intensity of the debate over whether the US is entering a period of strategic decline. Next slide, please. So turning to Asia, what can we expect into the new year and what into the future in what is now the most important region on the planet in political, economic, and security terms? The most important security development in Asia is the return of China to great power status. China's rapid rise in economic power, in political influence, and in military potential is changing the strategic equation in Asia. And the key question facing security planners is, what does China want to do with its power? Will it return to great power status in a manner that respects the established rules-based order, including working with the US-led hub and spoke security order in Asia? Or will China seek to overturn this order, at least in regions of Asia such as Northeast Asia and within South China Sea, and instead promote its own alternative approach that places Beijing at the centre? Andrew Erickson, who I'm sure most of you know, has recently stated in congressional testimony that China seeks to address historical grievances and rise again as a great power that commands neighbours' deference. Beijing seeks to carve out from the global commons the Yellow East and South China Seas and the airspace above them as a zone of exceptionalism within existing global legal security, within which existing global legal and security resource management norms are subordinated to its national interests. Current indications, especially since the rise of President Xi Jinping, suggest that China has moved away from Deng Xiaoping's dictum of foreign policy of bide your time and hide your strength, and instead is adopting a more assertive role in Asia. In this regard, it is now moving decisively towards promoting peripheral diplomacy in a manner that establishes the political, economic, and security foundations for China's great power in the 21st century. Raising the prospect that the 21st century may not be just an Asian century, but may in fact be a Chinese century. I think that China intends to challenge the established security arrangements led by the United States and challenge US strategic primacy in Asia, prompting an increasing risk of strategic competition between China and the United States in coming years. Next slide, please. So what is China's 21st century vision? I think a number of key developments have occurred since late 2012 that are now starting to make clear what China is building. These include the establishment of new diplomatic, economic, trade, political and security structures, including the Silk Road economic belt through Central Asia and Europe to Europe, the 21st century maritime Silk Road across the Eurasian littoral to the Indian Ocean to Africa, Latin America. That would give China greater access to developing economies and strategic resources, as well as an inflow of wealth from booming trade. The establishment of the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank as the financial engine of China's peripheral diplomacy. The proposed free trade area of the Asia-Pacific as a counter to the US-led Trans-Pacific Partnership, and the enhanced security role for the Conference on Interaction and Confidence-Building Measures in Asia. That would be led by China and promote Asian solutions to Asian problems whilst excluding the United States. In other words, an alternative to the hub and spokes. Next slide. In particular, these ideas strengthen Chinese soft power as applied to developing states in Asia, Africa, and Latin America, and build Chinese influence, potentially leading to an emerging Sinosphere. The development of the strategic maritime distribution centres in Africa that you can see on this slide is particularly important. Such approaches promote the Chinese concept of a community of common destiny and an Asia-Pacific dream as an extension of the China dream. They firmly establish Chinese leadership, reinforce regional integration with China, and increase incentives for recipients of Chinese investment to ensure China's return to great power status is achieved and sustained. They would also act to minimize the influence of the United States and its partners in Asia by building alternative security, economic, trade, and political structures that emphasize Asian solutions to Asian problems with China as the natural leader. They ensure China has greater access to strategically important resources and territory. Next slide. My interpretation is that these new peripheral diplomatic forays are part of a broader Chinese grand strategy to shape the Indo-Asia-Pacific region to suit its strategic objectives, which are the return to great power status in a manner that can be sustained indefinitely by building comprehensive national power, resolving territorial disputes and preventing external powers from preventing Chinese return to great power status. And this must ultimately see China challenge US strategic primacy in Asia and build its own security arrangements that place China once again as Asia's 21st century middle kingdom. I think Kevin Rudd made clear the significance of China's return to great power status and implications for stability and security in Asia when he noted that since 1945, the US forward presence has been the foundation of Asian peace and stability, as he put it, the fulcrum. And he noted that if China begins to replace the American fulcrum, the legitimate question from us all is what sort of alternative regional and global order would China seek to construct in its place? Next slide. So here are some key questions to consider. China's return to great power status is not going to see the US cede leadership, influence, and presence in Asia. Hugh White advocates in The China Choice that the US and China share power, but his prerequisite for this equilibrium to happen is for the US to cede some regional influence, and this won't happen, at least not immediately. Instead, there may be greater strategic competition between a returning China and an established United States, what Graham Allison refers to a 21st century Thucydides trap, in comparing the US-China situation to Athens and Sparta in 5 BC. Borrowing more from Thucydides is the prospect of a strong, assertive China with a strong economy and a powerful military seeking to impose a Melian dialogue on smaller Asian states, implying that the strong do what they can whilst the weak do what they must. Indeed, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi stated at a recent conference on foreign policy relations that China must conduct great power diplomacy, foster great power sentiments, and demonstrate great power bearing, especially when dealing with small and medium-sized nations. There is substantial evidence, particularly in relation to China's approach to the South China Sea dispute, that it is seeking to adopt an approach that would not be unfamiliar to the Malians. But already, some smaller East Asian states are seeking to counterbalance against China by building closer strategic relations with the United States, and most prominently by reinforcing the US rebalance to Asia. There is a growing regional pull to strengthen the US rebalance, particularly from 2017 onwards, and depending on who is in the White House at that point, may combine with a US push to ensure the rebalance is successful in the face of an increasingly assertive and confident China. China will adopt increasingly determined approaches to building influence, encouraging regional integration with Beijing, and trying to build economic, trade, security, and political structures that would minimize or exclude US influence. But the US won't submit to these soft power approaches, and I think they will double down on the rebalance and seek to strengthen the TPP. There is likely to be intensified US-China strategic competition, and with it growing tension over coming years. Regional flashpoints such as the East China Sea and the South China Sea could potentially act as trigger points for conflict, not necessarily by design, but by misadventure and uncontrollable escalation that follows. A key component of this strategic competition will be in the military realm. Chinese military modernization is continuing at a rapid pace and being designed around capabilities and systems designed to fight and win local wars under informationized conditions. And secondly, deter and deny access for US and allied forces into East Asia and the Western Pacific in a crisis. China's counter-intervention capabilities, what we refer to as A2AD, is causing serious concern in Washington, Tokyo, Seoul, and Canberra. It's clear that China is building the types of capabilities such that the US is now embarking on a serious rethink of its approach to the use of military power in contested anti-access environments. Most recently, we have discussions about notional third offset revolution to follow on the RMA in information-led warfare as the best means to counter Chinese military advances. Next slide. So where is all this going? China is clearly returning as a great power, and barring strategic shocks and black swans, what Rumsfeld called the unknown unknowns, I'd argue that the trend towards the growth of Chinese military, political, and economic power will indeed continue. In fact, a continued smooth ascent of China is perhaps better than a bumpy collapse, brought about by a hard landing of economic growth. Such a scenario is likely to see China become more nationalistic and perhaps more assertive. Their history and their strategic culture heavily influenced their approach to strategic challenges, and the Chinese have long memories. They see now to be their rightful time. They won't turn away from their destiny. China, I think, won't be bounded by artificial strategic lines on a map. On this map, near seas versus far seas, the importance of the first and second island chains and the near and middle seas is obvious. And that's where China is focusing a great deal of efforts in its military modernization. But its peripheral diplomacy and concepts like the 21st century MSR, the Maritime Strategic Silk Road, suggest a broader, grander vision for China's future. Final paragraph. China cannot ignore challenges beyond its immediate maritime and air approaches. The Malacca dilemma remains unresolved, and Chinese maritime security cooperation with other powers to sustain vital energy and resource flows to drive its economic growth only works during peacetime. China will thicken its A2AD capabilities in the near and middle seas, but it will have to start addressing capability gaps in terms of naval power projection south to the Southeast Asian Straits and beyond into the far ocean of the Indian Ocean region. The 21st century Maritime Silk Road provides an important political and economic foundation for building presence in this far ocean, much to the consternation of littoral states like India and, I'd argue, Australia. Next slide. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Malcolm.